QSO Today, Episode 46, Tony Parks, KB9YIG. Welcome to the QSO Today podcast. I'm Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, your host.
Before we dive into our QSO today, I thought that I would mention that I'm coming up on my first year of doing the podcast. I appreciate all of you who listen regularly to the podcast, and it's gratifying to see the number of listeners increase every month. I hope to expand the resources available online in the second year and bring on sponsors of the podcast to help me defray some of the expenses to produce and host the podcast. It is a labor of love, and I hope to continue to bring you interesting ham radio stories. I want to mention that I had communicated with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, the founder of Amateur Radio Newsline, probably the first ham radio podcast beginning almost 40 years ago as Westlink, to get Bill's ham radio story. We were attempting to find a hole in our schedules and in Bill's busy schedule before he passed away on June 11th, much to the sorrow of all of us who enjoyed Bill's weekly regular effort over the years. He will be sorely missed by the ham radio community, and I'm sorry that I was unable to get him on the podcast before he passed away. If you haven't already, please check out the show notes page. I spend as much time building show notes as I do on the conversations with guests. The notes contain links to names, places, equipment, parts, etc. that are mentioned in the QSO. It can be a valuable resource if you want to follow up on our discussions.
Over the years since I became a ham, the evolution of microprocessors and chips for signal processing has revolutionized radio design. Digital signal processing, or DSP chips, have revolutionized the way radios are built today and the way that we as hams interact with them. My guest today is one of the early pioneers in the area of SDR, or software-defined radio, and creator of the SoftRock line of receivers and transceivers at a very low cost. Tony Parks, KB9YIG, is my QSO today. KB9YIG, this is Eric, 4Z1UG. Are you there, Tony?
Hello, Eric. I hear you quite nicely. Go ahead.
Tony, thanks for joining me on QSO today. While I'm anxious to dive deeper into SDR, and believe me, I am, can we first go back to the very beginning of your ham radio story? When and how did it start for you?
Okay, well, let me reminisce a bit here, Eric. I became interested in radio in my youth when I found a earphone laying in the top of a trash can as I came home from school one afternoon. I was probably about 10 years old at the time. And My dad helped me build a crystal set to go with that earphone, and that led me down the trail of becoming interested in amateur radio. So at 12 years old, I was K6CUZ. I lived in San Diego at that time in my life, and had my general class license about the time I turned 13.
Uh-huh. When was this?
Around 1952, 1953.
And did you belong to an amateur radio club in San Diego at the time?
Yes, there was a group of teenagers at the local high school. And San Diego was known as the Silvergate City, and the name of our club was the Silvergate Amateur Radio Club. So we would get together occasionally, about once a month at least, and talk amateur radio and go on field day together and things like that.
Well, coincidentally, my ham radio journey started also in San Diego, actually in El Cajon. I was a member of the El Cajon Amateur Radio Club.
Oh, really? How about that?
Yeah. Much later, Tony. Did you have any Elmers or mentors that you can recall at the Silvergate Amateur Radio Club who helped you along?
Yes, there was a fellow who was a scientist at the Naval Electronics Lab on Point Loma, and he was an avid amateur radio guy, and he helped me initially convert a war surplus transmitter to get up and running on 40-meter CW. His name was Edwards. I've kind of forgotten his first name.
And do you remember what your first rig was?
Yeah, it was a S-38C helicopter receiver and a ARC-5 transmitter converted for CW operation.
Uh-huh. And that, again, that was on 40 meters?
That's right. Uh-huh. Crystal controlled, of course, at the time.
Even as a general?
Well, eventually, of course, I got into having a VFO and all, but that initial transmitter was a crystal controlled in the novice area on 40 meters.
And your K6 CUV license, as a novice, it was still K6 CUV, or was there a KN6 in there?
Yeah, I was KN6 CUVZ initially, and then in about 6 months of operating on the novice band, I got my code speed up to the 13 words per minute and got the theory down where I could go ahead and get the general class license at that time.
What kind of antenna did you have with that, with the Hallicrafters S38 and the ARC-5?
We lived in the city in a small lot. I had a 33-foot vertical.
The radials on the roof? Yeah, the antenna was on the roof of your house? And
well, no, the antenna was ground-mounted. The base of it was right down at just about ground level, and there were some radials buried in the garden area of the lot there.
How did ham radio play a part in the choices that you made for the career that you chose and your education?
Okay, if you'll let me reminisce just a little bit there.
Uh-huh, sure.
I wasn't a very good student in public school. And so after graduation from high school in 1958, I went into the service, the Navy, and became a technician in the aviation branch of the Navy for the next 3.5 years after high school. And it was during those years in the Navy that I thought, well, I'm going to give college a try. And I had saved my money, so I had money to pay tuition and all. And a fellow that I knew in the Navy who was from Missouri encouraged me to apply to the University of Missouri at Rolla, which was an engineering campus of University of Missouri. And so there's where I went to school to work on a BS degree in electrical engineering and did get my degree from there. And after that, I had a good grade point average in college, so I thought, well, I'll go ahead and try to get a master's degree, and went up to Purdue in Indiana and got a master's degree and also, incidentally, a wife while I was at Purdue.
Uh-huh. Well, that was convenient.
Oh, yeah, right. I think both have served me well.
What did you end up doing after you left Purdue?
I went to work for various companies. I worked for General Electric up in Vermont, Burlington, Vermont, for about 10 years. And that particular department of General Electric was involved in gun turrets, Gatling gun turrets, and both for ground-mounted vehicles or ground vehicles and aviation. And I was involved in control systems for gun turrets in my years at General Electric. And in subsequent years after that, I worked in various control situations at various companies. And my last 10 years was with Roche Diagnostics here in Indianapolis, where I helped design ICs and circuitry in blood glucose monitors. So it's kind of a variety of activities that I had during my working career.
But the education as an electrical engineer and probably as a ham radio operator made you pretty versatile in terms of what you could do.
I think so. The thing about my amateur radio experience is during those years when I was working for various companies, I really got away from amateur radio after my junior high years of being very active in amateur radio. I just about completely got away from amateur radio until I partially retired in 2000 and started looking around for some things that would be fun to do in retirement. And then is when I got back into amateur radio and got my general and then extra class license with my present call letters.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you're a returner. I too am a returner to amateur radio after a 25-year hiatus. So one of the questions I was going to have is what kind of impact did amateur radio have on your family life? And I guess it may not have had an impact, or did it?
Really didn't. I was I dabbled in it occasionally over the years, but almost no involvement at all from my youth until I came back to it after partially retiring in 2000.
Uh-huh. And now that this 15 years later, is there an impact of because you're a big player in amateur radio now?
It's what keeps me very active these days. I get up early. I'm an early riser. Often I get up at 4 in the morning, and I'll get kits together or even build kits for people, and my day is skewed that way. It starts early and ends around dinner time in the evening.
What do you operate on the air now?
Right at the moment, I'm so busy just dealing with building the kits and putting together kits to fill orders. I'm not on the air. But when I first returned after 2000, I built a number of the Elecraft kits and operated QRP CW mostly. And right at the moment, I'm really not on the air. I have my fun with just playing with the kits and building kits and testing them and having the pleasure of having a freshly built kit work properly.
Of the Elecraft kits that you are that you built, what which one did you build?
I built a K1 and I built a K2? I think I'm remembering correctly.
Multiband.
Yeah, that's right.
You're the creator of the Softrock SDR radios. That makes you a pioneer, I think, an innovator in software-defined radios, at least in the corner of amateur radio. Can you explain what SDR, what software-defined radio is, and its advantages for amateur radio?
Okay, let me first mention how I got involved in that, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
Around 2004, I noticed in QST an ad for the Flex Radio board stack that was called the SDR 1000, and it kind of interested me, so I bought one of the SDR 1000 board stacks and began playing with it. And a number of us would get together with voice over internet and try to work through the details of getting our board stacks up and running. And as I looked at the circuit diagram for the SDR 1000, I thought, well, something very simple could be done to make a little SDR receiver that would be very low cost. And so that led to the original Softrock 40. And Softrock was actually suggested by one of the guys that I chatted with over the internet, who thought that would be a good name for a crystal-controlled, center-frequency, simple SDR receiver.
Did you say why?
The frequency changing, of course, was done by the software portion of the equation, and the rock and the soft rock, of course, referred to the crystal-controlled
center-frequency.
And it was a 40-meter receiver initially.
So what is a software-defined radio?
It's a radio that takes and digitizes the signals, whether you're talking about received signals or signals you're going to transmit, and does various signal processing to these samples. If you're talking about something you're receiving, of course, you need to demodulate it and get the intelligence out of the signal that you're receiving. And if it's appropriate, you need to then put it out on a loudspeaker or earphone so that it can be listened to or decoded in text if it's that type of signal. And kind of the reverse of that, if you're talking about transmitting, going from a keyboard to signals that can be transmitted and then at the receiving end somewhere demodulated and displayed or listened to.
Well, SDR seems to be the way that radio design is going. What do you think is the best way to get started in SDR?
Okay.
I mean, obviously that's a loaded question.
I maybe do mean to
load the question, but frankly, I've never started an SDR. So if I wanted to, you know, get going, I've got friends that use the DVB dongles, which are these European digital television dongles,
uh-huh,
as a way. But it doesn't appear to be in the low frequency ranges. They tend to be in the VHF, UHF ranges. If I was looking to do something in the high frequency ranges, what's the best way to get started?
Okay, well, I'm still chuckling about the opening you made for me, but of course, my recommendation would be start with something low cost that will give you a sampling of how SDR works and receive. And a couple of the kits that we have on our website are, I think, fit that description pretty well. The Softfront 40 or the SDR, the light kit, allows a person to sample receiving signals via a Softfront defined receiver at about $20 for the kit.
And this kit, this is a single band, or is this from DC to blue light? What kind of frequency range does this have?
Well, the light 2 combined kit, as it's called, contains the parts and the crystals such that the kit can be built for any band from 160 to 20 meters. And so for around $20, a person gets this circuit board and several little bags of parts, capacitors, resistors, et cetera, ICs, where they can go ahead and build the kit for a single center frequency on one of these bands from 160 meters through 20 meters. And the intent there is to allow a person to sample SDR at a low cost. And I feel like we're doing it fairly reasonably, really.
So if I built one of these radios for 20 meters, does it have the bandwidth to cover the entire band, or would I build it, you know, put the center frequency, say, if I like the CW portion or I like the single sideband portion of the band? Is it that specific?
Well, the amount of band that you see depends on the sampling rate of the sound card. If you're sampling at, say, 96 kilohertz, stereo sampling at 96 kilohertz, then the spectrum that you see is plus or minus 48 kilohertz around the center frequency that's crystal controlled, mm-hmm, in this case. And the crystals are a little arbitrary that way. Mostly they're down towards the low end of the band, since my it exposes my CW preference. For example, the 20-meter crystal gives a center frequency around 14.047 megahertz. And if it were used with a sound card that could sample at 96 kilohertz, then the bottom 48 kilohertz of the 20-meter band below the center frequency and 48 kilohertz above that center frequency are available.
So the crystal frequency then is the reference that the software uses to know, you know, what the band edges are.
No, it actually sets the down conversion. The mm-hmm. The way the receiver works is the crystal in an oscillator circuit is used to generate quadrature clocks that are directed to a quadrature sampling detector, which is basically a down converter. It converts from RF down to audio, and then the quadrature audio signals are directed from the receiver board to the stereo line-in channel of the sound card to do the A to D conversion on these samples. And then, of course, the SDR software processes these samples to display the spectrum and output audio for the user to listen to, and digital filtering, things like that make for proper operation.
So there's a whole issue then of software. So is there a specific software to use with the SoftRock radios, or is there a whole gamut of software development that's compatible with the SoftRock radio?
I use a program called Rocky 3.7 in testing receivers and transceivers that I build here. It's one of the older programs that a fellow up in Canada developed the program and made it available at no cost to the user community. But there's a number of similar programs that have good features that are available at no cost to download. And SoftRock, of course, is just one of a number of possibilities to use with these programs.
Are they all combined? I remember a couple of years ago, some friends getting into software-defined radio, and it was like they were splicing together little pieces of different programs in order to give them, you know, a full feature set that you might, you know, see in a Flex radio, for example. Is that still the case, or are there software suites now that work with these radios that just have all the features and everything like that?
Okay, well most of the programs support a number of modes. For example, Rocky 3.7 supports CW and PSK31 operation, and some of the other programs that are also available for free to download support SSB operation and other digital modes. And there's even this program that allows for very low power transmission worldwide with signal reporting back on the internet.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what the name is.
Whisper?
Yeah, Whisper, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And the developer of Whisper actually contacted me when he was in that process, and he wanted to use one of the RXTX transceivers, one of the SoftRocks, to use with this program. And so I cooperated to that extent of helping that way.
Okay, so that was Joe Taylor who was developed Whisper. Is that
right.
Your recall?
That's
yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, I've seen the SoftRock and other SDR radios attached to ham shack PCs and laptops. What opportunities do you see for integrating smaller computers like the Raspberry Pi to these radios?
I haven't done it myself, but I have heard people that have been successful in doing things with SoftRock and other similar type of hardware pieces to integrate them, use them with these other things that are other than a laptop or a desktop PC.
Yeah, I was just speaking with some of the guys that do SODA. You know, where they carry radios to mountaintops. And I'm thinking that taking a software-defined radio to a mountaintop would probably be great if you didn't have to do it with a laptop computer that you also have to, you know, to carry up there. So it seems to me that, I guess, as these Raspberry Pis and other computers get more powerful, that they could easily support these SDR radios.
Yeah, I think so. The XT machine I use in testing built receivers and transceivers is a fairly old-time XT machine, fairly low power. So I'm sure that some of these shirt pocket devices anymore are more powerful than my old XT machine.
Do you see any Android apps or iPhone apps or things like that that could interface to the SoftRock at this point?
I kind of have gotten the sense that people are doing this, but I can't really quote anything.
Are you active in an amateur radio club?
I have at times. There's a local amateur radio club in Newcastle, Indiana, which is near my rural location, and I It's been a while since I've been involved in a local group like that. I stay so busy with the kids that I'm an early riser. I get up at 4 and then often right after dinner time, I kind of collapse. My endurance in the evening is limited.
Did you have some kind of a morning routine even before you had the kit business that allowed you to, you know, increment or move the ball along in any of the projects that you had?
Often I would have a fairly long commute from my rural location to my workplace when I was working a quote 40-hour week. And if you've talked to guys that have been involved in engineering, you know that there's no such thing as a 40-hour week. It's mm-hmm. There's always some additional hours on the end or on the weekend or whatever to get the projects moved along. And then, too, of course, as my wife and I were raising our two children, that took quite a bit of time. So amateur radio got shoved aside for a number of decades, and it was only after I retired and I started remembering what fun it was in my youth and came back to it.
Did you pursue any other interests during that period of time as you're raising your kids?
Prior to the kids?
Well, no, about the same time as the kids. Did you take them through Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or...
One other interest I had in my mid years was I was a private pilot, so I would go flying about every Saturday. And as my children were growing up, I would maybe take them out flying on a Saturday morning or whatever.
Yeah, there's some commonalities here. I just interviewed two people over the last couple of weeks that all started their ham radio journey with a crystal set. It's funny how that becomes a common denominator, this idea that that with a germanium diode as a detector or a cat's whisker or whatever you had at the time, that you could pull a signal out of the air and actually listen to it. When you started designing the soft rock, do you use software? Do you use like CAD software or anything like that?
Oh, yes, for the board layout. There's a company, PCB Express, that furnishes schematic capture and board layout software. And in return, you order your boards from them. And that's worked out nicely. I think they provide high-quality boards, and I like using their software. So the board layouts are done that way.
I see. So you use their in-house and use the board design software as well, the board layout software.
That's right.
Do you find that that's the easiest product to use? I have to tell you, I actually found it a little bit challenging, but maybe it's like anything else. You know, when you learn to ride a bicycle, you got to fall down a few times.
I found the PCB Express board layout software and chromatic capture quite easy to use. I'd used other programs along the way in my engineering career, so these seem to fit nicely with my previous experience.
Are you designing multi-layer boards, or just two sides?
Yeah, for these products, they're just two-sided. Multi-layer isn't needed, and moreover, wanted to have a quality board, but fairly low cost.
Can you actually use PCB Express to design a multi-layer board?
Not sure about that. My boards are just top and bottom layers, top and bottom side.
If you're kitting parts, who do you use in North America to get your parts from?
I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank here.
Newark.
The other one that...
Mauser?
No, I've used them too, but I'm sorry. The name of the company, it's just fled from my memory here.
Yeah, I used to use them as well. I mean, these parts companies are great. I mean, because you're not buying in the quantities where you'd go to a vendor and buy 1,000 ICs or something, 10,000 resistors.
Yeah, well, I've produced enough kits that we do buy by the larger quantity. It hasn't been unusual for us in recent years to put in a $10,000 order for parts, which on a commercial basis, of course, that's trivial, but on a personal basis, that's a...
Yeah, it's pretty big. More. So where do you see software-defined radio going in the future?
I think Flex Radio is headed in the right direction, where they're combining the A to D and D to A functions within the radio itself. Of course, the software rocks depend on the A to D and D to A functions being done in the sound card. And that complicates the situation a bit because various kit purchases have various sound cards. And so there's always the difficulty of getting the SDR software set up properly with their particular sound card. But I think Flex is moving in the right direction myself.
Uh-huh. And when you say sound card, could it be a USB audio dongle that's a sound card, or do you actually rely on the onboard, on motherboard sound card?
I have a sound card within my old XP machine here, but a number of people have mentioned that they use a USB sound card device that's external to their PC.
Which allows them to use the sound card in their PC for other things.
That's right. Often,
right.
Perhaps the sound card within the PC will actually be lower performance than they want for the A to D, D to A functions having to do with RX and TX. But the internal sound card will be just fine for mic input or speaker output.
Can you run multiple sound cards? If I wanted to run multiple soft rocks, you know, different bands, you know, in my ham station from my PC, can I, if I was using a US external USB sound cards, could I run multiple radios from my PC?
I haven't done it myself, but my thought would be it's probably possible. My area of experience is mostly with hardware, so I'm not a very good person to ask such questions concerning the flexibility of software and multiple instances of various types of programs running simultaneously.
Do software-defined radios like the SoftRock, do they require any like pre-selectors for the, you know, for front-end filtering in band?
The RX2 and RX3 ensemble receiver kits, their front end consists of 4 bandpass filters, and depending on the center frequency that the user selects, it selects the appropriate bandpass filter. And so all HF operation is achieved that way with an RX2 or an RX3 receiver, that and a sound card and the software, and you have an all HF receiver.
And those bandpass filters are selected with relays on the board in some kind of control?
They're selected with IC switches. The FST-3253 is a 8-channel switch IC, and they're used not only for selecting filters, but also in the demodulation of the RF down to audio.
Ah, so they have they're able to switch at very high speeds, or at least the frequencies of the received signals.
That's right.
Wow. Wow, that's really cool.
I was just going to mention that. Let me throw in a disclaimer that so much of what I've done really is just based on looking at what Flex was doing and getting good advice from various individuals, and then just kind of pulling the bits and pieces together to come up with a circuit board that implements these circuit functions and then provide it in the CAD. So I've taken advantage of experience from other people and recommendations from other people.
So as a path into SDR, I mean, I think that the stuff that Flex Radio is building and that Elecraft is building, and I mean, all that stuff is, you know, amazingly beautiful. It's quite expensive. I mean, I wouldn't want to deter anybody from not buying one of those. But I think it seems to me that as a path, as an amateur radio path to really understanding SDR, that going with a soft rock kit at the very beginning is a way to actually understand what's happening. You know, and how the whole process works before getting into a bigger rig. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, that would be my thought. That if someone were to ask me, well, what should I do to get into SDR? I would say, well, buy one of my low cost kits and give it a go, and you'll if you build it carefully, you'll be fairly impressed with what inexpensive hardware can do when it's linked together with SDR software.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Let me emphasize again that there's been some individuals that really were very helpful in making the SoftRock line of kits useful. For example, the Ensemble receiver kits and the Ensemble transceiver kits. The firmware that's on these boards was designed by a fellow in Fred Krohm, P-E-0-F-K-O, and he supplied a number of versions of this firmware that tied the hardware together properly so that the software and hardware can talk to it properly together. And another fellow, Robbie Robson, WB5RVZ, took an interest in the kits and thought that what was needed is a step-by-step build instructions, a kind of Heathkit-style instructions for the kit builders. So Robbie set up a website, and he built a number of the kits and figured out step-by-step instructions and made those available on his website. And other individuals have just taken an interest in this low-cost hardware and really made all the difference in whether or not it would be useful and functional for people.
And have they also, are there also people that have specialized in creating the software for the soft rock radios?
Oh, yes. This Rocky 3.7 that I use, I've got a mental block on the fellow's name who wrote it, but he went through a number of iterations to make this Rocky software useful. And there's a number of other programs, and even the Flex Radio software can be downloaded and used with SoftRock kits to some extent. So there's just a whole flock of people that have made it possible that some fairly low-cost kits could be useful in helping introduce others to the advantages of SDR-type operation.
What advice would you give to somebody that is entering the hobby or returning like we both did to the hobby?
Well, I would, if they enjoy building things, I would recommend that they buy one of my kits. Or if they don't enjoy building things, I've built hundreds of the receivers myself and try to do it at a low cost. For example, the $68 Ensemble 3 receiver, I charge $25 to build it. Takes me about 4 hours to build one, so you can see that I'm not trying to take advantage of anybody. I just would like to make it possible for people to try it.
No, you're cheaper than a Chinese laborer putting together the radios.
Well, they may be faster. I'm nearly 75, and my hands wobble a bit, but I can still do it, and it takes me a while to do, but I still get a kick out of building the kits.
Uh-huh. Do you wind your own toroids?
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. Is there a secret to winding toroids so that the count is right and it still looks neat?
I've done it a lot, and I kind of have, by experience, I've learned how to try to not overlap the wires unnecessarily, and try to make it a neat-looking inductor or a neat-looking transformer.
Yeah, I discovered when I built my K2 that I had to wind the toroids when I knew I wouldn't be interrupted. So winding toroids in a kit is not something you do if you're frequently interrupted and you have to put it down.
Yeah, quite so. Often I'll have one of the built receivers playing in the background. The all-HF receiver will tune down to the bottom, the top end of the AM broadcast band. And so often I'll have a local radio station playing in the workroom here. But when I'm winding inductors, I have to turn that off.
Do you make soft rock receivers that work up in the VHF-UHF band?
There is a version that is for 6 meter, 4 meter, 2 meter operation, a receiver. We've sold it a bit, but I'm not real enthused about it. I know that the HF versions of the receivers work nicely, and I'm not convinced that this VHF version is really a very good product for people to buy. Lately I just haven't even been offering it.
Maybe this is a case where the DVB dongles might be better suited for this these upper bands, since I guess this is where they were intended to work.
Quite so. If someone asked me, I would recommend give that a try.
Well, I know I wanted to buy a spectrum analyzer. I've got a Motorola service monitor here with a CRT that's going bad. So I thought about using SDR receiver as a way to actually look at the spectrum, and I guess you can get pretty close in the HF band with the soft rock radios and the software. What do you think about that? Can you use these things as a way to see whether you've got spurs all over the band?
Sure. There are some noise spikes associated with the soft rock itself. For example, at the center frequency, depending on the center frequency, at higher frequencies, the center frequency noise seems to be greater than at lower frequencies. So there is some things that one needs to understand what they're looking at and perhaps ignore.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Tony, it's been a real pleasure. I really appreciate that you came on with me on QSO today. I've learned a lot about soft rock, and I love building kits. So I can chalk that up to another item on my list for the summer. My item list for the summer seems to build every week, every time I talk to somebody. So there's a lot of stuff that I need to try, and I hope that the listeners of the QSO Today podcast will also consider the soft rock as a way to get into SDR. So with that, I wish you 73.
Okay, well, nice talking to you, Eric, and thanks for giving me a call there.
That concludes this episode of the QSO Today podcast. I hope that you enjoyed my QSO Today with Tony, KB9YIG. Be sure to check out the show notes page at www.qsotoday.com and put in KB9YIG in the search bar at the top of the page. I will post links to the references that Tony made in the podcast. If you have any questions for Tony, please be sure to put them in the comments section at the bottom of the KB9YIG show notes page. Please take the time to join the QSO Today community. There are buttons for this on the website and on the bottom of the show notes pages. I promise not to spam you or share your email address with anyone. QSO Today is available in the iTunes Store and in the Stitcher Podcast app for both iPhone and Android. There are links to these places on the QSO Today website. Until next time, this is Eric for Z1UG 73.